Thanks for being with us here this morning on this Saturday. And there is a little gem of a place not too far away, not even quite an hour and a half from us. And I know we all drive further to go do different things. And this is one that you need to know about. And I will say I didn't till recently meeting David and talking about it. It's in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, just a short drive away. It's called the Theater Museum of Repertoire Americana, and one of the board members of the theater and a former troupe member and producer and director of some of the shows that they hear about at the museum, David Wagaman, joining us here this morning. David, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. It is a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for being along with us. Well, my gosh, David, this is such an interesting thing. And it's not just the fact that a lot of us don't know about the museum itself in Mount Pleasant, but what the museum is about and the Repertoire Americana, these traveling shows that I, until we had a discussion about it, I didn't know these had existed, what, from the 1850s all the way up through the 1960s?
Right, absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about these shows themselves. And I guess it, in some ways it sounds like in the beginning anyway, looking back into the mid-1800s, that obviously there was a lot of communities that didn't have any type of theater. Bigger cities? Yes, but for the most part, out in the rest of the, I guess at that point, Western world, west of whatever, Pennsylvania, or even further east of that, there wasn't theaters in communities, but yet they were able to have shows that included, like a three-act play with other entertainment along with it?
Oh, yes, they had three-act plays, and they had a vaudeville acts between the acts of the play. They sold candy and gave away prizes. And what they did, they go out to the hinterlands all around the country. There were over 600 of these shows traveling at one time. And they employed many, many wonderfully talented people, multi-talented people. And they would go into a town with this huge tent that would seat at least 1,000, if not more. And they would do a different play each night of the week. And and at the beginning of the season, everybody would meet in the headquarter town of these shows, and they would have 2 weeks rehearsal, and they would work up 5 three-act plays in those 2 weeks. And then they would open, and they would start out, and as they're traveling around, they would work up 2 more plays to make a full week of plays, different plays. And then they would even rehearse more in case something like somebody get hurt or something that they had to leave the show, they would have another play or somebody to work up.
Well, and it's so much, I guess think of a circus tent that you might see that in a community, but it's not a circus going on. This is what you saw instead of at the, before movies, the advent of movies. And again, if you didn't have a playhouse or opera house, this is what you saw. This was the acting. This was the show going on.
This was. And at the beginning, they would do Broadway plays. Now, movies came along and then television, and it ruined the whole thing. So they had to rethink their style of plays. And since they were out in the hinterlands playing to the farmers, they decided to create a character who worked on the farm, who was not too bright, but always outslicked the city slicker.
Of course, of course.
And it worked for them for many years. And then something else happened, maybe World War II, and they couldn't get actors. They were all gone, you know. So that some of them went to radio and did their, like the Schaffners, Toby and Susie. They would go to WMT in Cedar Rapids.
Cedar Rapids, yeah.
And they would do their 15-minute Toby's Corn Tussle. That was the news. And, of course, it was all comedy, but they lasted there for quite a few years on the national broadcast.
Well, and I was going to say, and there were some other pretty famous people that had done and had traveled in these shows that decided to go on, like you said, whether it was to radio and then even into movies and television.
Oh, there were many stars in Hollywood. Doc on Gunsmoke, Clark Gable, Boris Karloff. I mean, that list goes on and on and on. And that's where they got their training, their start. And a lot of them even up to, it was in the 50s when this one woman came on the Schaffner show. They took her to their side and trained her. She went from there to Hollywood, got a leading role in a movie.
Wow.
And then you see that there's no training. There's nothing like that anymore. All they want to do, the students want to today is just go to school, get a degree, go to New York, and become a star. Well, it doesn't work that way.
Not quite that easy, is it?
No.
Well, and what, like you said, what wonderful training, though, in front of a live audience. Yes. Every night, so many nights a week, three different acts. And you might also be doing some vaudevillian stuff in between, or singing or dancing or whatever. So there were a lot of the people that were not only actors, they were yourself included. And we'll talk more about that and your career. Did multiple things in those shows other than just acting.
Well, I know one night on the show up in Minnesota, the piano player, she just didn't show up for the night show. And so what do? We tell the cast what's happened. This guy, you wouldn't even expect him to know anything else but acting. He said, well, I could play piano. And he sat down and played the whole show that night.
Wow.
It's amazing. Yeah. And the artwork that these people did. Well, it's just amazing. And it's a shame that it's no longer, but, you know, life goes on. But Neil Schaffner told me many times, show business revolves every 25 years. Well, it's been more than that since Carol Burnett went off the air. It's been more than that since Ed Sullivan went off the air. And a lot of other shows went off, too. But it's time to rotate back to where we were at one time when life was a little bit easier and a little bit more less complicated.
Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't seen this like the shows you mentioned. There's been nothing like that for quite some time because the Saturday Night Lives of the world, that's a completely different type of show. Mm-hmm. There's not a variety show out there anymore.
Not anymore, no. Yeah. Oh, my gosh, they had so many wonderful variety shows.
I mean, and so many that, you know, what were the later Flip Wilson or, you know, the Smothers Brothers and just so many that came along. And I remember as a kid, Saturday mornings, they even some spun off from different. I remember the Hudson Brothers. I don't know who they were. I think they were more musicians, but it was kind of a comedy variety show. Sure. That they did. They even had one for the Harlem Globetrotters on Saturday morning. So David Wagaman is our guest this morning. He is one of the board members of the Theater Museum of Repertoire Americana in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. We're talking about what the museum is about, what led up to the museum. You know, the thing that surprised me was that you told me, and I understand that, you know, going through especially the 1800s and even into the early part of the 20th century and until movies and theater started coming about, how these shows continued. But gosh, these were still in existence. You acted and directed and everything and produced some of these shows all the way, what, into the 1960s? Is that right?
It was, yes. Well, wow. Maybe it was even into the 70s.
Into the 70s even, okay.
But it was a struggle to stay that long.
Yeah.
It was a real struggle.
Well, I suppose, like you said, trying to find actors, number one.
Well, number two, that's a lot of hard work, moving that tent up and down, driving the stakes and on all of this, and still maintain the mind to do a play that night.
Right.
But, you know, you can't get kids to do that anymore.
No. No, not at all. And especially as an actor, like you said, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to be an actor, I'm going to be a star. It's going to be pretty easy. Well, I'm driving stakes? What, helping to set up the show? No. There's other people for that. No, not in this case.
Yeah, no. But, you know, there was a woman from Chicago that came in to join the show, and she would walk around with her nose kind of up in the air, and because this was way below a stage in Chicago. Well, it may be. But doggone it, it was a training thing. And she, it didn't take long until she came around and joined the rest of us. Had a good time in the season and talked about it for a long time afterwards.
You're still playing in front of an audience. Yes. I don't care who the audience is. You're playing in front of an audience and doing it live.
And doing it live, yes.
Gosh.
Oh, my gosh. Even some of the characters in the plays, you know, they had, like, Monday night would be the dress-up play. And Tuesday night would be another. Wednesday night would be a hillbilly, and so forth, the different parts of the week. Anyway, the Schaffners wrote their plays. And he had this one family that was from the big city, and they had their nose in the air because that was the country folks. And, of course, they were the city, and they were dressed up, and they were smart. And they're not as smart as they thought they were. But anyway. And at the end, Toby said, and they were getting ready to move. And Toby said to this woman, here, take this. And it was a slop jar, if you know what a slop jar
yes.
was.
Yep.
Thunder mug or whatever you want to call them.
Right.
and she grabbed it, and then she realized what she had in her hand, and she and the curtain drops.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. That's really good. Really anyway, good stuff.
But, yeah, and you know, sad things happen on shows. On the Schaffner Show, I think it was my last year with them, there was a man on there that had been in the business all of his life, played trumpet, acted, painted, did all these things. Well, the play was the couple was getting a divorce, and the attorney was doing a property settlement for them. Now, the couple was sitting facing the facing the audience, and the attorney doing the property settlement was upstage from them facing the audience. Well, he was hard of hearing and not feeling well. And it was just before the end of the curtain, the third act curtain, I had to make an exit, and I was in the dressing room, and I heard the curtain hit the floor. Well, when I ran out to see what was going on, this attorney had had a heart attack and was leaning over on the table there in the chair.
Oh, my gosh.
And so Toby got up and closed the curtain and asked for a doctor. And they got him to the hospital in Quincy, mm-hmm. And during the night he passed.
Wow.
So now there is a part that's laying open. So Bert Dexter steps up and he said, well, I know the part, because these people, they trooped on all these different shows for years, and there were just so many scripts that they would work with. They knew all of the scripts. So then when it came to rehearse, it was easy.
Well, there's that old adage, the show must go on. It's not that you did not feel bad for what happened, but this is what we do, and this is what he would have expected would happen, or anybody would expect, that, hey, if something happens to me, they're still going to do what they're here to do, and somebody else is going to step up.
One of the interesting things about Leo Lacy, he had this tube of grease paint, and it was empty. So he took a little knife and opened it up on both sides, and he would take just a little bit here and rub here, and a little bit on this cheek, and he kept saying, "Oh, there's enough for me." And he was right, because when he had that heart attack, he had no more grease paint.
Wow! Wow! Kind of prophetic in some mm-hmm. ways. David Wagaman joining us here this morning to talk a little bit more about the Theater Museum of Repertoire Americana in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. So the museum itself kind of started, it sounds like, in conjunction with the Midwest Old Threshers. Is that right? Or?
Well, somewhat.
Okay.
The Schaffners knew something was going to happen to this form of show business. So they started collecting from all of the other shows and what other people had to offer that was a part of this company. And I don't know, they started collecting that, I think, back in the early 40s. Well, when it came time for them to retire, where are they going to go with this stuff? Well, they went to Old Threshers, and they had somebody on the board that understood what was going to happen. And so they built the building. I think it's 90,000 square feet. It's an upstairs, downstairs. Downstairs is a theater. And so that's how it all came about, is Old Threshers came along and supported it. Now, it's been there, I think, 60 years.
Wow.
Yes.
See, and again, I know many people around here go over for the Old Threshers, and mm-hmm. And again, that I hope somebody here knows about it, has been there, but if not, here's your opportunity. We're telling you all about it now, because this is what it sounds like, just an absolute gem of a place in Mount Pleasant. So you mentioned there is a theater in the downstairs. Are there still shows performed at this point?
They do it during Old Threshers.
Okay.
And the last two weekends of July. Now, that's been the program in the past. What we're going through now, I have no idea. No one has any idea. So
right.
We just have to take it day by day. But that's what the downstairs is for, is to continue doing the Schaffner plays.
Absolutely.
Now, inside the museum, when you come in the door, you see the posters from the Broadway shows back in the early 1900s that were performed on these stage shows. Then, when the season is over, the managers of the theater of that show would go to New York and see the plays and talk to the actors to come out and perform the plays for them. And that worked. So then the Schaffners, when all of that came to an end, they had to write plays. So they would take some other plays and rearrange the characters and so forth and rewrite it and make a character of Toby and Susie. And it worked well for them for a long time, and they leased their plays out to other shows. And it was just a great experience.
Well, it sounds like it.
Healthy. Talk about a healthy style
life. Yeah.
You're getting all this exercise out in the fresh air. You sometimes the food in those old town restaurants, cafes were a little greasy, but it got us through.
Got you through, right? Sustenance, right?
Yes.
David Wagaman joining us. We're going to talk a little bit more about the museum itself and about David and his career coming up. This is Galesburg Live. Good morning. This is Galesburg Live. I'm Tom Meredith. My guest this morning, David Wagaman. He is one of the board members of the, I have to read it every time, the Theater Museum of Repertoire Americana in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. The hours, if you'd like to check it out. Let me ask you right now, are hours normal right now with all the pandemic stuff going on or not?
No, during the winter, it's closed.
Okay.
So by appointment only.
Okay.
And then during the summer, it's open.
All right. And it's just $3, and there are group rates available if you got a group. Seniors or whomever that would like to check out. Again, we're talking like, an hour and maybe 20 minutes away. And it's a whole lot easier to get to Mount Pleasant than it used to be.
Oh, yes.
You got four lanes a good chunk of the way now. Mm-hmm. There's some parts that aren't, but not a bad trip at all. And some really, really neat things. We were just talking off the air about some of the things. Of course, there was music along with the shows. And you said there are some musical, really interesting musical instruments that are in the museum that people can take a look at.
Yes. One of them is a player accordion.
Which, who knew there was such a thing? We've all seen the player piano, but a player accordion.
Yes. You just squeeze the box back and forth, and it has rolls inside of it, and it just plays beautifully.
That's my kind of instrument. The squeezing I can do. It's the playing I couldn't do. But sounds like there's some really, really, really neat things in there. Talk about some of the other memorabilia in history. I'm guessing are there many photographs from times past of the different shows and things?
Oh yes, we have a library. The library is loaded with posters and of different shows and different companies. There were minstrel shows, black minstrel shows, all black cast. In fact, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, which
we just had this discussion a couple weeks ago, that there is on Netflix, there is a movie kind of about her life, kind of a biopic about her and her as a blues artist. But even in the movie, it shows her doing one of these tent shows.
She's in her tent, doing her singing. Yeah, there was a lot of them. And in fact, a lot of those minstrels, black minstrels, trooped with circuses. It would be a tent aside from the circus tent. And that employed a lot of black people that way. And you know, the interesting thing about those black minstrel shows, they had one white person. And that person would be the advance man for the show, go in and get the lot and the license and the permits and all of that, and find housing for these performers. Now, back in those days, they were not allowed to be in a hotel or any restaurant or any of that stuff. So they would go to the black church and talk to the congregation to see if they would put these people up for a week or however long they were going to be there. And it worked fine. It worked well with them. So thank God we don't have that problem.
Well, anymore. No, and what amazing talent was in those shows as well. Oh my gosh.
The Schaffners got to see Silas Green from New Orleans, a big black show. And Caroline told me several times, she said, that was the best show I have ever seen.
Wow.
The talent. And that wasn't easy for those people to do that.
Yeah.
And keep the costumes clean and all of this and the dirt and what have you.
Oh, yeah, you're traveling. It's not an easy thing on any part. Well, the museum itself in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. So if things are somewhat back to normal, it would be opening, in May then?
It would be the last part of May around Labor.
Memorial Day. Around Memorial Day then. Yes. Okay. So Mount Pleasant, Iowa, again, just a short trip away. And there's some really, really cool things you're going to see, and that gives you a reason. A little day trip from here, and not a bad trip at all. Well, David, I want to talk a little bit about your career as well, because you've done a lot, and including acting, directing, producing these shows. You've also been on Broadway. You've been in Hollywood working it, and you've done acting, as we said, producing, directing. You've worked with some really, really big names. Tell me your background. How did you end up doing what you were doing?
Well, when I was 4 years old, we moved into town from the country. And that spring, the Schaffner Players came to town. We went to
And this was Burlington?
It's in West Burlington.
West Burlington, okay.
And so we went to see the show, and the show was so good that it just drew me right in. And I've always wanted to be on that show. So the day I graduated from high school, I was on a show like that, joined it that night. They handed me my part. I studied all night long, and the next day we rehearsed it, and I went on that night. And that was the start of my acting career. I got my acting experience on tent shows.
Wow.
And then...
I'm like thrown right into the fire, though, too, literally. Like, yes. Okay, here's my part, and here I am tonight. Wow.
Anyway.
Trial by fire. Right?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Purified by fire.
There you go. There you go.
So, and then after the seasons changed, I auditioned for an agency in New York to go out and direct musical reviews for organizations, for fundraisers, mainly women's clubs. And I worked on over 300 of those shows. And I had Tony Bennett, one of them, and you know.
That's a pretty big name.
That's a pretty good-sized name. And then, you know, you get a little tired after 13 years of doing that. And I never unpacked my luggage.
Right.
You just keep going from town to town to town to town, like the Music Man. And then I went to Hollywood, and I tried out, and I got a couple of good parts. I worked with Susan Sarandon, Jake Gyllenhaal, Dustin Hoffman, Jim Carrey, and my most favorite was Anthony Hopkins.
And that, what a great story with him. And what, you know, because obviously most of us, we don't know what a lot of people are like. We hear stories that, hey, this guy's nice, that guy's not, this woman's nice. But it sounds like Anthony Hopkins was just, it seemed like he was, from the stories you tell, so gracious, and no matter what he was, because he was both what, acting and directing in this show?
He wrote the script.
Okay.
He directed it. He starred in it. He wrote the music for it.
Wow. And who knew that?
Who knew that?
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, he was also an artist, and he painted and framed all of his work to give to the cast and crew. I have one of those.
Wow.
But we worked out in the desert, out in Palm Springs, California, in the desert, not in town, hotter than and
blazes.
And they had air conditioning, and they had this machine outside, and they had these big flexible tubes, and they blow the air into the little area where they were working. Well, sometimes that worked, sometimes it didn't, because those old buildings outside just were not capable of holding the cold air in. So he made sure everybody was comfortable. He made sure. And doggone it, you know, you just don't find that very often in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of great people in Hollywood, but and I just met a few, but he was the one. And you know what? He's Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Right.
But
right.
He did not want anybody to call him anything more than Tony.
Really?
Yep. He was Tony all the time.
Huh. I wonder if it was different when he was back in the UK, because where it mattered even more. I don't know.
I don't know either. But he's also written an orchestra. It's called the Something Waltz, the Beautiful Waltz, I think.
Oh, wow.
And they performed it on television with this guy that's always directing orchestras. I don't know what his name is. And Anthony and his wife were in the audience. Oh, what a pleasure that was to see him there in that audience.
Well, it's so amazing to think about creative minds, that sometimes somebody's creative in one thing or another, but somebody that's creative in so many different facets, mm-hmm. It's just amazing. Yeah.
There was a young guy on set with Anthony, and obviously Anthony Hopkins knew who he was because he gave him a part. And then I didn't pay any attention to this guy because he was such a loner. And I couldn't get to him. But anyway, the last day, I went to have lunch, and they had a large trailer, air-conditioned, for people to have lunch. So I got my lunch, and I went in there. He got his lunch and came in and sat next to me. Now, we're talking, and he mentioned his name, Tucker, something Tucker. Anyway, he mentioned his mother. His mother and grandfather trooped on tent shows doing magic.
Oh, wow.
And his mother was also Miss Texas one year. Frances Willard. Well, I knew her. And so we had a long talk about his mother. And his mother had written a big, like, coffee table type of book on magic and the years that she and her dad did magic.
Wow.
Just blew me away. You just never know.
The small world there, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
That's what a great story.
And another time they were in Victorville, where I was living close to Victorville, California, and they came in to do a show at the college. I knew her act, so I knew I had to wear a sport jacket. So I went to them before the show, and we just talked a little bit. And it came time, so I went out and got in my seat. And during the show, they called me up on stage because I was wearing this sport jacket. Now, in this number, her husband and I tied her up. Tied. I mean, we tied her.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of rope and went around and around her and tied her. Anyway, they had this hoop on the floor. He said, step inside. I did. She stepped in behind me. Now, she's still tied. And he lifted that hoop up over us, and he shook it a couple of times, and she said, okay. He dropped it. She had taken my jacket off, put it on, and then tied the rope back up on her.
Wow.
And that fast.
Oh, wow.
I still to this day don't know how she did. And when
That's
I felt
amazing.
That hand on the back of my jacket rip it off.
Yeah.
Now, the sleeves went inside out.
Right, but.
So she had to put the sleeves back right
get
them back
geez.
On. So
that's amazing. Yeah, just like you said, the talent of people that could have been huge stars other than the tent shows,
oh,
probably
yes.
more than
yeah.
likely.
Yeah. And they did cruises, and they worked on all kinds of shows. But
well, if you want to know more about these tent shows, the Theater Museum of Repertoire Americana in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, it'll be opening again in, well, hopefully,
absolutely.
Pandemic aside, hopefully toward the end of May around Memorial Day, and what a gem. Mount Pleasant, Iowa, just, you know, hour and 20 minutes away or so, and what a really neat thing. And you know, they've got group rates available. It's only $3 person anyway. And
well, that's an old flyer.
No, this is an old, okay, but it's still reasonable.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, still reasonable. And just some really, really neat. And you know, it's not, and I yes, it is about the history of those shows, but that's a lot of American history as well.
Absolutely.
That you're talking about.
No, yes, it is.
Yeah.
We have not only the instruments, but we have costumes, we have scripts, and we can show you how they studied those scripts. Because they don't give you the full script, just pieces of it. And the library is loaded with letters and tidbits of what people went through and did. And this would make the greatest movie ever. It would.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a lot of times they were in the tent and the storms would come along and blow the tent down, rip it all up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then the cast had to come and sew it all back together, put it back up for a show that night.
Okay, next project.
Yes.
Are we talking a documentary? Are we talking an actual movie?
Actual movie.
That,
I would like
there you
to
go.
See that.
I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Or
oh, that,
even Ken Burns to do it.
Oh, that, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, what it sounds like just a really incredible place. I'm looking forward to coming over and checking it out at some point because it's just some really neat things, some really great stories. Now, will you be there sometimes to tell stories to people?
I do.
Okay.
I'm there. Yes.
Good deal.
And if I'm not there, just have when they call Old Threshers to book a tour, tell them you want David Wagaman to do your tour. So I will be there.
Absolutely. David Wagaman, our guest this morning, some great stories and what great history. Again, the museum in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, and just some really, really amazing things. David, thank you so much for coming over with us here today. Really do appreciate it, and appreciate you taking some time with us here this morning.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I really enjoyed meeting you and talking with you, and what a beautiful studio you have here.
Well, thank you. Well, we're going to have to get you back again because I know you got lots more great stories, too. David, thank you again.
Thank you so much.